Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go hook him up!
We got our other co-host on the line who was out doing stuff and hanging out with people who it was just too good to call into our show and be a part of the show last week. Craig, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going?
What's happening, Craig?
I got a little bit of a cold, but I'm all right.
A little bit of a cold? That's the least that should happen to you since you almost got our good friend Matt Clary deported.
Not deported, incarcerated possibly, but not deported.
Well, you had asked that you wanted to tell some Pearl Jam stories, so since we're starting up, why don't you go ahead and tell your little tales that you have to tell?
Well, it's not really a Pearl Jam story per se. It's more of a kind of a summary of Matt's trip up here. He showed up Friday, I'm on cold medication, forgive me. He showed up Friday and got him off the plane and started showing him the sights. We did a bunch of stuff with him here that I've actually never done, even though I live here, if that makes any sense. So the first thing is we hit the Jimi Hendrix Memorial, where he is buried in Renton. And that was interesting. Some great pictures on his Facebook page. You can check those out. And then we hit Seattle and did all the touristy stuff.
Why was he buried in Seattle? Was he from Seattle?
Yes, Jimi Hendrix is from Seattle.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Bruce Lee is buried here as well, but I forgot which cemetery it was. So, anyway.
I was at a host. Host you are, because I would have, like, died to have gone to Bruce Lee's grave. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. I think his son's buried right next to him as well, Brandon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, anyway, so we hit Seattle and did Seattle things and went to the top of the Space Needle. And, again, I've never done that in all the years I've lived here, which is 39. And ended up very late night.
I've actually been in Seattle for 3 days, and I actually went to the Space Needle before you did.
No, I was actually in the top of the Space Needle. I went to the, you know. So, yeah, probably. If you went to the top, then yes.
The one thing about that Space Needle is I'm not, like, really scared of heights, but, like, when I do go up on top of these, like, the Space Needle or the thing in Vegas, or there's a tower here in San Antonio, I kind of feel uneasy for a few minutes before I get my bearings. And when I went up on that Space Needle, it seemed like it took me like 15, 20 minutes before I could. I felt right up there. I felt like I had grabbed something the whole time I was up there until for like 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, it was interesting. But yeah, I felt the exact same way. And we ended up Friday night. We ended up having some late dinner with Brian and Whitney and a bunch of people. And and celebrated Whitney's birthday. So yeah, it was all good. And Saturday, I again got him up early, and we sat down and watched the Pearl Jam movie because it was on demand. And that's awesome. So check that out. And
what is the plot of this Pearl Jam movie?
What's that?
What's the plot of this Pearl Jam movie?
It's basically just a documentary on their first 20 years that they've been around. So.
Okay.
So if it was on demand, why did you have to wake up early? Can't you let the man sleep a couple hours on his vacation?
Well, we were up anyway. I didn't wake him up. He was actually up before me. I just, anyway, I fed him.
He's a foreigner. They're weird like that.
Yeah. I fed him some maple bars with bacon on them. If you don't know what that is, then you need to visit the Pacific Northwest because maple bars are amazing.
With bacon?
And with bacon. They're phenomenal. I can't describe how amazing they are.
Thanks for buying me one when I was there for 3 days, Craig. Appreciate it.
Well, this place just opened up, so suck it. Also had a blueberry cheesecake donut that was amazing as well.
Just sounds okay.
And then
real quick, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but speaking of desserts.
Again.
Speaking of desserts, when I was there in Seattle, Vinny and Dr. Lucha took me to some like little Denny style chain that had like about 100 pies on the menu. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Cherries,
yes. If you ever go up to the Pacific Northwest, go to Cherries because that place was the fucking bomb.
The pie is good. I'll give you that.
The breakfast was awesome. The sausage was awesome. And you shouldn't have just said that. But the pies, I had some like mixed berry pie that was just like phenomenal. It was awesome.
They make an amazing peanut butter pie there, by the way. So, but I'm a fan. So, anyway, getting back to the thing, we spent Saturday doing nature stuff. Went to the base of Mount Rainier, and then over to a big place called Snoqualmie Falls, and went and watched fights with some friends that night. Had a good time with them. Matt only had 4 Guinnesses, so it was good. And Sunday we got started early and headed up to Canada. And had a short visit at Brian and Whitney's, and then had a really good lunch with this kid Andrew. He was actually at Mania for the last 2 years, I think it was, or it was Houston and Arizona. So anyway, he's from around here. He's a nice cat, and I got to meet his wife and tried talking them into going this year.
Is he like a Middle Eastern dude?
Possibly. He's got darker skin.
I think I know what you're talking about. I think I know what you're talking
about. Yeah. Anyway, we were running a little bit late, so we hit the Canadian border, and of course we get there. And Matt was good enough to get a passport and brought his green card and also his driver's license. And if you don't know who Matt is a Texan via the UK.
He's not Texan.
So, anyway.
Listen to his voice. He's not Texan. He lives in Texas.
Einstein. Thank you, Katrina. Thank you for being the voice of reason in this conversation. Anyway, he's from the UK, but he's living in Texas. So when people ask him, where are you from? And he says, I'm from Texas. And he's got that accent. You go, sure you are, kid. And so... anyway, we pull up, and the nice lady's like, she's like, all right, where are you from? And I tell her, and then, okay, where are you from? And he's like, Texas, sure you are. And then she asks us about 20 questions. She says, okay, what I'm going to need you to do is I'm going to need you to drive up here and then hand this piece of paper to this officer, and they go in the little building over here, and they're going to ask you some more questions. I'm like, okay. Because I figured this was going to happen just because of everything, because I've been across the border a few times. And anyway, so we get in there, and we're talking to this other lady, and she's asking us the same questions. And she gets to, so how did you guys meet? And we're like, I'm like, we met online. And okay, and she's like, okay. And what website? And I was like, WrestlingObserver.com. And she's like, what does this say? That's a wrestling website. And so she's probably looking at us like the two biggest gay guys in the U.S. coming over to their country. So she tells us to go sit down over there, and we go sit down over there, and I'm like, okay, it's no problem, Matt. And so finally she calls us up. She goes, you guys are free to go. All right, sweet. So we go to the show, and here's the funny part of the trip, if it hasn't been funny already. I know that Pearl Jam is playing in Canada. I've seen them in Canada at least 5 times now. So 4 times previous. And I drove to the Rogers Arena, and I parked. And Matt says, you know, there sure are a lot of people wearing Vancouver Canucks jerseys here tonight. I said, yeah, I know, Matt. They, you know, they came in second, basically, in the world, in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you know. They're, you know, it's cool, you know. They're probably just, you know, showing their pride, you know. And we get closer, and there's more jerseys, and I'm looking around for, like, the Pearl Jam fan club window, you know, and Matt's like, there are a lot of Vancouver Canucks jerseys. And I looked at Matt, and I said, Matt, they're proud people. And I'm looking around, and then Matt goes, they're playing hockey here tonight, Craig. And I'll be darned, they're playing hockey here. So I went to the most knowledgeable guy I could find, a ticket scalper, and said, is Pearl Jam playing tonight? And he goes, yeah, oh, yeah, it's 15 miles down the road over here, blah, 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 blah. I was like, oh, crap. So we're at the wrong arena. So Matt was kind enough, and he went back and charmed the guy out of our $25 parking that we had just paid, and got to the show. It was an amazing show. I had – that was odd. Had an awesome show, and I got back to the house here at 3:15 a.m., made the jaunt back in record time. I won't say how fast I was going unless we have any officers listening. But, yeah, made it back about 3:15, and the alarm went off at 8:30, dropped Matt off, came home and took a nap. So, yeah, it was a good visit.
Now, when Matt was talking to the parking guy about getting his money back, did Matt tell him why you guys were asking for your money back?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You're lucky you had a nice Canadian that was taking the money, because I would have been like, well, that's what you get for being stupid. Get your money.
Yeah. He was hardly Canadian, number one. Also a man of color.
He could be Canadian just because he's the black. What the hell, Craig?
Not when he says, thank you for coming. Anyway, gave us our cash back. And, so luckily the...
Well, you do know there's a lot of Indian people who live in Canada. He could still be Canadian.
Are you kidding me? Oh, hey, darn. Yeah, I knew that, Ed. They almost did country. I have no idea.
Okay. I know that because that's where the Sheik used to wrestle a Tiger Jeep scene.
Okay. But the best part was when Matt was packing to go home, he brought so much stuff. He bought so much stuff that while he was here that he actually left me a box full of stuff to send back to him because he got so much merchandise.
Have you sent that box back yet?
Yeah, I sent it off today, as a matter of fact, because I didn't have his address till yesterday.
Well, since you forgot to get me those 222s while you were in Canada, I hope you decided to make a surprise run to Canada real quick before you set that box back and actually put those 22s in there.
Yeah, it's only 3.5 hours up the road. I'll do that right now.
Go for it.
What are 222s legal fireworks?
We'll have the show without you.
Goodness. But anyway, yeah, Matt's an awesome guy, and And if you ever invite him over, he's liable to pay for dinner once or twice. So I'm pretty sure I owe him some money, but he wouldn't take it. So big props to Matt Cleary. He's an awesome dude. And if you don't know him on the board, you should get to know him because he's a great guy. So, Matt, your stuff's in the mail. And by stuff, I mean all your dirty clothes because he wanted to take his goodies home.
Yeah, Matt's cool. Like, I remember in Phoenix, the hotel was kind of weird, and my room was kind of, there was actually no balcony because my balcony would have been inside the hotel.
I know the
so
story.
I couldn't, and it was a non-smoking room, so I couldn't smoke weed in my room.
Uh-huh.
So
right.
Luckily, Matt had a room on the other side of the building where there were actually balconies, so I actually got to go outside his balcony and get all stoned before WrestleMania,
uh-huh.
which was pretty awesome of him to let me do.
Wow. Yeah, Matt Cleary, he's such a great guy. He might buy you dinner, and he might let you get stoned on his balcony.
Yeah.
Amazing. Oh, one more cool thing. We went to this place called Easy Street Records in Seattle. It's like an iconic indie record store. So iconic, in fact, that in 2005, Pearl Jam actually played the record store for just indie record store owners. They like moved all the cases out of the way and they played there. And as we were pawing through all their merchandise, I went up to the vinyl section because, yes, I still collect vinyl. And I found this Pearl Jam 45, and it was like behind the counter up against the computer screen where the teller sits, you know. And so I look at it, and it's autographed by Mike McCready, the guitar player. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And I've got I don't mean to boast, but I've got Mike's autograph on like half dozen things here in the house because I've met him 3 or 4 times. Anyway, I took the record down and I showed Matt. Matt's like, oh, that's cool. I want that. And we took it down to the teller and it had a sticker of $22 on it because it was signed by. And I showed it to the teller. I said, hey, I want to be honest. I found this. It was behind the counter, blah, 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 blah. You know, are you holding it for somebody? And he goes, oh, hold on a second. And he goes, well, if you come back. And I said, I can't come back. This guy's from Texas. He's going to be leaving, blah, blah, blah. So he proceeds to take the single, punch in some numbers in eBay. And I come back and he goes, how does $5 sound? Totally ignoring the $22.95 price tag on the thing. And I said, yeah, that's cool. So he marked it, and I gave it to Matt, and Matt took it up to the guy and rang him up for $5. So that's pretty awesome.
Cool.
You're totally, totally impressed, I understand.
A riveting story.
I know. It was awesome, though, because, you know, we saved $15. Anyway. Okay. So anyway, what are we doing tonight? By the way, thank you for the communication on what we were doing tonight. I didn't know until I actually went to the board and found out what we were doing tonight.
Did you get my email?
Yeah, just like 10 minutes ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's nothing you had to prepare for.
Yeah, well, I posted that thing earlier. Well, actually, Craig, I did try IMU, and you just ignored me. And then you got offline like 2 minutes later.
Well, to be honest, it was like 5:45 in the morning here, which means I was, you know, 10 minutes late. So, yeah, I totally ignored you, but I was on my way to work, so.
Well, there you go. That's why you don't know what's going on the show.
So my choices were be late for work or
figure
out what's going on with the show tonight.
Pretty much.
Okay. I think I made the right choice. Just saying, because I'm pretty sure that job pays better than this one. Actually, I know it does.
Yeah,
right.
You know, we're working for free, so.
Right. By the way, how many beers are you in to this evening?
I've drank about a 6-pack.
Uh-huh.
And plus, I've been smoking this whole time, too. But I'm ready to
Why you had to smoke and drink?
Well, that
increases your high,
Katrina. That's what I can look at. Not only am I supposed to drink.
I didn't ask if you could do it at the same time. I asked why you had to do it at the same time.
I just have to. Like,
it's a waste.
It's not a waste. What are you talking about?
And by the way,
I'm trying to smoke weed. If I was on coke, that'd be a waste.
It's by the way, it's dangerous. You know, stimulant and depressant going into your body at the same time. Not a good plan there, Edward.
No,
I mean, either you get high or drunk, why do you got to do both at the same time?
Let's just get on with the top 50 incidents in the history of WWE.
Now he wants to get on with the program. I love it. So where did you guys get this idea?
This thing was on Netflix, the new DVD.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay, well, that makes sense.
So I was watching it last week and suggested it for a topic, but we got talking about all sorts of stuff last week, so we didn't get to it. So
you spent like 30 minutes talking about the Muppets.
Well, we just spent 20 minutes talking about a trip that none of you guys were on, so there you go.
Are you excited for the Muppets, Craig?
I am excited for the Muppets. I'm hoping Gonzo will be there.
I just thought of this yesterday. They could do an episode. They could do Vicky and Miss Piggy, Pigs in Space.
Pigs in Space. I love that show, man. Those judges, phenomenal. Just the best.
I've actually thought about going back and watching a couple of those movies, like the Muppet movie and Muppets Take Manhattan.
They don't hold up. You know, there's a new one coming out in November. We should probably quit talking about Muppets, otherwise we're just going to have a repeat of last week's show. That's true. So, anyway, we've got the top 50 incidents.
Did you want to do the pay-per-view preview first?
Yeah, we might as well.
We'll get that out of the way quick, and then
I'm not even going to watch this pay-per-view. I feel bad.
Who the hell should have sent me text updates? Tell me who won.
There's another guy on the line. Why don't you ask him?
I asked him. He only sent me the Mark Henry one last time.
Oh, goodness. So, this weekend is Hell in the Cell, and it's emanating from New Orleans. Is our black friend Rodney going?
Actually, I don't know. He hasn't said anything, but I wouldn't see why he wouldn't be.
Okay.
Maybe spend his money on Hood Justice and can't afford to go.
Oh,
jeez. That's true. Anyway, Hell in a Cell is this Sunday. Check your TV listings for time and availability. First off, we have Sin Cara versus Sin Cara.
I just got done,
right, and I just got done watching the angle on SmackDown, and Sin Cara, the evil Sin Cara, debuted his new black getup, and it's actually pretty cool.
Well, thank goodness, because I was getting confused.
He doesn't have to put the spot on his boot anymore.
Right. The black spot has been replaced by a black outfit. So, anyway, that looks cool, and you know what? I think this is going to be a good match. I don't care what Brian says. I think these guys are going to have a good match.
I think
good match or someone's going to get fired.
I don't know, since he's come to WWE, it seems like I watch his matches and I'm always looking for something to fuck up.
Right.
I don't know why.
Well, I'll tell you why.
Kind of been hit and miss with him so far. I guess with some
it also has to do with Brian talking about that before he even debuted, about how he should be on the tape show and not the live show.
Yeah. The only reason I'm looking for it is because I actually saw them. I saw the Chavo Sin Cara debacle live with Brian sitting right next to me in my ear telling me all the stuff he's doing wrong. And I'm looking at him and I'm going, I know, shut up. Anyway. So I think this is going to be a good match. I think Punico's I don't think he's a great wrestler, but I think he's a competent wrestler. So
He better show it. He's been hit and miss.
I think it's going
to
be a good
match. Well, they've both been kind of hit and miss, to be honest with you.
The what?
Yeah, you're right.
Both of them kind of been hit and miss, to be honest with you.
Well, considering that Mystical is selling a shitload of masks at $79 a pop, and
Mystical isn't selling, but Sin Cara is.
That's right.
Well, Sin Cara, whatever.
I mean, technically WWE
because it's Mystical.
No, because it's Sin Cara, because it's a mask character. It's not like he's doing anything special to sell these masks. He's just this kid-friendly mask character, and that's what's selling.
You think if they put Steve Lombardi under the Sin Cara mask, it would have done the same thing?
If you didn't know it was Steve Lombardi, it probably would. And you you built him up for being a Mexican legend.
Did anybody else have the vision of his ripped jeans and T-shirt with a Sin Cara mask on? Just me.
You could have put a Primo under the mask at Sin Cara, and he would have spent the same amount of mask.
Anyway. So I'm looking forward to that. And then we got Christian and Sheamus, which will be, I bet it would be the best match on the show.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Sheamus has been awesome in his little face run so far.
I think
so.
You should go on to the, well, we'll get to the Mark Henry thing. I'll save that for when we talk about the match. So.
Also announced, these are only the announced matches, by the way. I'm sure they're going to throw something else in there. Kelly versus Beth Phoenix. Again, I just got done watching SmackDown, and they had a great build-up for this match. And they honestly needed to, because there was only 2 weeks between the two pay-per-views. So Natalya put Kelly in her new submission hold that she put on Eve last week on Raw. So pretty good.
Actually, Beth should win this one, or I don't know what the whole point of this whole thing has been.
And then probably, I'm guessing this will be our curtain jerker match. There'll be a Hell in the Cell for the World Championship, World Heavyweight Championship, Mark Henry versus Randy Orton.
Yeah, or if they're doing two, I could say going on in the middle of the card. And then
I hope they're going on first. That way I can watch it before I go to work.
Well, they've in last year they started with one and they ended with one. So I'm just guessing.
Well, didn't they have three Hell in the Cell matches last year?
I thought it was just the two, but I could be wrong.
I don't know. It don't matter.
Well, did they have the NXT Hell in the Cell match that I missed?
I don't know.
Drunk. And then in the main event, the triple threat Hell in the Cell match, it's John Cena versus Alberto Del Rio versus everyone's favorite CM Punk.
Yeah. Going back to Mark Henry and Randy Orton real quick, and talk about that, they need to keep the title on Mark Henry, or else they just, I don't know, the whole point of even putting it on him is.
I totally agree.
He's like the most over heel they have right now. I mean, he's a freaking monster. I would do something, maybe Cody Rhodes gets involved to go after Orton, maybe do like a short program with Orton and Cody afterwards, and then go to Sheamus and Mark Henry next month or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mark might not have anything to worry about, because apparently SmackDown did some kind of outrageous number the show after the pay-per-view. Yeah.
And I have a theory on that, and I might be like totally off base, but it is just a theory. If you read any of the spoilers last week, you know that there was a ton of blood on this show. And I think people went out of their way to set their DVRs to see blood. That's just a theory, and it might be totally ridiculous, whatever, but I don't know. It's kind of the way there was nothing else on the show to see. I think people were, you know, got spoilers and went, ooh, let's check that out.
I watched the unedited version, from somebody's phone or something like that on YouTube. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, you're kind of giving the internet community a little too much credit, because it's not that big to make that much of a difference. I mean, that was an outrageous jump. I mean, you know, that's
right.
But I mean, I can see what you're saying. I mean, I'm sure there were a bunch of people who did that, but I don't think it was that community is that much to make that much of a difference. But we'll see.
Another thing you have to
look at the ratings is the more play they give Sin Cara, the more the ratings going to go up, and that's a proof of the fact. If you look at Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero when they were on SmackDown having good runs.
Mm.
The more Sakara gets over, the more the rating is going to get up because the more Mexicans are going to watch it that night.
I'm just saying, if you don't usually watch SmackDown and you got the spoilers and you saw that, you know, that Cody Rhodes bled a gusher, if you don't usually watch SmackDown, that might be something you'd go out of the way to see. I'm just saying.
It was still a hell of an angle, even though they cut all that stuff out.
It was. He looked like a monster. He looked like a freak, and I think it builds good to his match on Sunday. So,
and also there was a weird thing with AM Raw, like it had a pretty big jump, you know, like the Raw recap show on USA. It comes on at like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right. Yeah. Who knows? And one more thing before we get into our topic, Katrina, did you watch Ring of Honor this week?
Yes.
What did you think of it? Because I know you're not the biggest ROH fan.
I mean, the wrestling was good, but, I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me to get into it. It's just, maybe because I don't know a lot of the people.
Right.
Just like, just not many personalities. It made me want to come back and watch again or something like that. So,
really?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't fault you for that. That's, you know, that's cool. You know, to each their own. I really enjoyed the show. I thought it was very good.
I don't care
especially
much for Kevin Kelly.
Really? I thought he did very well, actually.
I wish they put Jim Cornette as, like, the lead announcer or something.
I can't argue with that. He's phenomenal. So, Ed, do you have any thoughts on the ROH show from this last week?
I thought it was pretty good. I mean, it wasn't like blow away or anything, but
right.
I mean, the matches were pretty good, and I thought it was all right. You know, everyone's saying that they get better like from around the third and fourth show anyway, so I thought it was a good first effort.
I watched the pay-per-view Sunday before last, and I was watching it on my iPad, actually, and I noticed, I didn't notice, but I felt somebody peering over my shoulder while I was watching the ladder match, and turns out it was my 5-year-old watching Jay Briscoe bleed a gusher all over the place. And he's like, "Daddy, this is really cool." And I'm like, okay, son, I don't think you should be watching this. So I shoot him away. And again, last night as I was watching the show, by the way, what a great show to replace Impact on Thursdays. Anyway, watching the show again, and my son Cameron is going nuts for Future Shock. He's like, "Those guys are great, Dad." I'm like, "Yeah, they're pretty good." So, might have a ROH fan up and coming. So, anyway, let's get into this DVD that the WWE has released, the top 50 incidences in the WWE history, in WWE history. And do you want me just to start at number 50 and read them off? Is that where we're going to go?
I thought we'd start at 50 and just give like quick comments and stuff like on that and just move on through it.
You mean you don't want to start at number one? No. Okay, I know.
Well, it's not like this is going to be like... I'm such anticipation of what number one is. You know?
This is
not like one of those absurd, like 50 greatest superstars of all time things. No, so. Really,
yeah, it's like, I don't know if your guys' radio stations did this during the New Year, but they'll count down like the top, like the big station over here is 99.9, so they'll count down the 999 songs of all time. And then you're waiting up all night, and then midnight comes, and it's stupid Stairway to Heaven for the number one for the like 10th year.
That's what I say. If 999 songs, just give me the list. I'm not gonna.
Thank you.
You know.
You mean you're not gonna sit through? Gosh, I wonder what 667 is. Anyway, starting off at the 50th incident in WWE history, which I think is very low on the list, by the way, is Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant in the main event of WrestleMania 3.
Oh, it isn't.
No?
it's the main event of the first main event on February 5th, 1988 on NBC with the twin referee.
Oh, okay, my bad. I ask forgiveness from the wrestling knowledge god. So yeah,
did you have this written down right in front of you?
Say what?
I thought you had sent Craig a list. I thought he was reading off the list.
I did have a list, but it says I just assumed, which you know what happens when you do that. So anyway,
Hulk Hogan versus Andre being made to feel like an ass.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant at the main event on February 5th, 1988. That's what he wrote. So, anyway.
Yes, this was.
Yes, with
the
twin referees. I got you.
I'm guessing we all probably saw this live. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw it live.
Yeah. This was the rematch from WrestleMania 3, and you know they had the thing where Ted DiBiase had bought Andre's contract from Bobby Heenan, and he wanted Andre to win the championship and give it to him. And so they had this match. It was pretty horrible. In the end, Andre gave Hogan what has been reported as a suplex. I think it was just kind of like a fall on the mat. And he pinned him 1, 2, 3, so he had his shoulder up, and the ref kept counting.
Right.
And so then he gets the championship belt, and in one of the great live moments of all time, he says, "Now I proudly turn over the WWF Tag Team Championship to Ted DiBiase." That was awesome.
Oops.
And so they're leaving, and Hogan's still in the ring. He turns around, and there's two Dave Hedners in the ring.
Dun, dun, dun.
I guess up to this point, you know, as you got on in years, you learn more about, you know, like who referees are and stuff like this. But I don't think I really knew it at this point that there was like an Earl and a Dave Hebner. Maybe
right.
I didn't pay too much attention. But I said, wow, they sure do look like. And so one was like the fake Earl Hebner. And so it ended with one Hebner beat the shit out of the other Hebner, and then Hogan picked up the evil Hebner and threw him onto Ted DiBiase and Andre. And then Hogan does this promo in the back, and he's going, "How much did you pay for the plastic surgery, man? How much did he pay?" And it was just an awesome angle. I would have put that in the top 10, to be honest.
Yeah, it looked pretty good. Your description of it was pretty bad, but the actual angle was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Next, why this is on the list, I'm not 100% sure. Nexus shows up on Raw, June 7th, 2010.
That was tremendous.
Really?
Yeah. Might not have
that
when they
awesome.
First showed up and tagged John Cena. That was awesome.
A tremendous?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Jesus, where were you back then? You didn't like that?
He was sitting next to Brian Alvarez with his nose in the air, looking at the angle, looking down on it.
I thought that was pretty much everybody
you guys who
were in the angle at the time when they.
It was awesome. It was so awesome. It got Brian Daniel fired.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess maybe I'm just jaded because I know how the whole thing ended.
Well, we're not talking about when it happened.
You guys are talking all over each other.
Well, you're frustrating us. Don't like this thing.
Okay, as I look back, I guess it wasn't that bad. But 50? Come on.
I think you belong in the top 50 if you're ranking top 50. Because even though it wasn't much after that, but at the start, it was like it was pretty awesome. It was kind of like that first when ECW showed up in the invasion.
Yeah, it was awesome. They took out the announcer, so it was just quiet while they beat the rest of the people up. I mean, it was awesome.
They tore the ring up.
Yeah, number 48.
And you're just a snob. You don't like anything. Next one.
Yeah, I've been saying that for a long time.
Number 48. The Big Show chokeslams The Undertaker straight to hell. June 7th, 1999. And Taker got chokeslammed on a gimmick part of the ring, and it collapsed.
They basically copied
when they did it in ECW with Taz and Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Okay. It wasn't as good as that one, but it was still pretty good. I mean.
Yeah.
Number 47, we have Goldust versus Rowdy Roddy Piper, WrestleMania 12 on the 31st of March, 1996, backlot brawl. They actually culminated the angle in a they tried to recreate the O.J. Simpson car chase during the match. I remember this match and thought it was amazing, and kind of the beginning of the Attitude Era, as I kind of remember it.
Yeah, because Goldust, you know, he's doing kind of the, well, you could say was the gay thing back then, and I mean it kind of it kind of went back and forth on what he was, but that was tremendous. He and Piper was beating the shit out of him back then.
Yeah.
Parking lot.
Yeah, that match was fucking awesome. That match was fucking awesome. That's all I can say about it.
I just remember the cut-ins during like a couple other matches at WrestleMania when we saw the white Bronco and just said, I think we've seen this footage before.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. That was awesome.
Next one. Let me see. September 7th, 1991, Macho Man Randy Savage and Elizabeth have their wedding crashed by Jake the Snake Roberts, who sends them a python as for a present.
That was awesome. It was a snake in the box. She opened the box and she started screaming. That was tremendous.
The best part of that whole thing was Bobby Heenan just shaking his head in disgust and just shaking his head. And
then Randy Savage says, show this man the exit.
Yeah. That was awesome. That was like Elizabeth's kind of like the most lines she ever had in that one skit. She said more in that one skit than she ever did.
Just the simple fact that, you know, everybody's been to a wedding and you see the bride and groom opening up their gifts and they're so happy. And then the WWF puts a snake in the box. Amazing.
That's what makes a wrestling wedding so awesome. Stuff like this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Sorry, I had to go grab my cord from my computer, so give me just a second. I'll get back to this. We got power! Sorry about that. Number 45, John Cena stacks both Big Show and Edge on his shoulders for an FU on April 5th, 2009 at WrestleMania 25. Amazing.
Sure. Well, just the fact that he did that to the Big Show is amazing, but fucking he had Edge up there, too. I mean, you got two dead body weights up there. I mean, that. John Cena.
I think like half a dozen feet of strength from John Cena that they all kind of blend together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Number 44. Am I going too fast? Undertaker kills Paul Bearer on June 27th, 2004 at the Great American Bash. After defeating the Dudley Boys to save him from a concrete enclosed structure, Taker falls into the box himself.
This was stupid.
Fills, not falls. Fills the box himself. I apologize.
I don't know why he killed Paul Bearer. That was stupid. That was a terrible joke.
His ghost is so much thinner than he was, by the way. Number 43. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was pretty stupid.
Number 43, DX invades WCW on April 27th, 1998. Triple H, X-Pac, China, and the New Age Outlaws were sent to the Norfolk Scope in Virginia in a tank to try to get into the show and see how much they could get away with, and they got away with a bunch. I remember WCW fans trying to get into the building, waiting to get into the building, chanting DX, DX. Tremendous.
That was one of the best moments in like the whole Monday Night Wars when that happened.
I know it's totally junior high humor, but just the visual of one of the DX guys, you know, sitting on the cannon, so he's got this phallus between his legs. I just so funny. Anyway,
so the best part about that was where Billy Gunn was talking about, I got a Sam's car, we can get a bag of chili dogs like this.
And I remember, didn't they go like to Atlanta and they went like to the offices, which was like these small buildings, like a very small buildings somewhere in like right outside of Atlanta or something. WCW office.
Well, they went to two because one of them was actually pretty big, and then the one that you're talking about with security wouldn't let them in. But actually, I think this whole thing is ranked pretty low. I mean, 40-something. I mean, this was one of the most awesome things they ever did in that time. I mean, this got
this
people talking about the WWE big time.
I think this is a top 20 at least. You know, that was up there. That was up there with, like, Lex Luger showing up on the first Nitro or something like that, you know?
Right.
One of those weird things. What's funny, they did a couple of these, like, on each Monday they do, like, some stuff they had taped. And I don't know where China and Triple H were, but the New Age Outlaws and X-Pac were there. They were looking for China and Triple H. And Billy Gunn keeps asking, "Where's Hunter? Where's Hunter?" And Road Dogg just finally gets so pissed off. He says, "I don't know where he is, Rockabilly. You go find him." And I just laugh my ass off.
Oh, goodness. Number 42, the New Age Outlaws send Cactus Jack and Chainsaw Charlie, Terry Funk, off the top of the entrance ramp in a dumpster on Raw. They were having a hardcore match when they found themselves in a dumpster, which the Outlaws took advantage of by rolling them off the ramp. And I remember marking out like a little kid. It was one of the easiest bumps to take because they had like styrofoam peanuts and cardboard boxes and probably crash pads inside the dumpster. And it was such a ridiculous thing to have two heels, baby faces thrown into a dumpster. But and as I remember didn't this end in an actual dumpster match?
Yeah, WrestleMania, which was an awesome match.
Yes, it was.
Well, the best part of the whole thing wasn't even the bump. It was just how every single person sold it after the thing.
Jim Ross, this was like a Hell in a Cell thing. You know, he sold this awesome.
I mean, Terry and Mick sold it acting like they were dead inside the thing. I mean, it was just awesome. And then when they came out with their fucking wires, the needle and the tube still stuck in their arm.
That kind of killed it for me, though.
I don't know. I laughed my ass off, but I mean, it's just, everyone was just awesome the way they sold it. They actually sold it like they actually died in there, and like Craig said, it was the safest thing they could have done.
Yeah, I mean, you got the road agents out there, and Sonny, she's crying her eyes out, and then they do the wrestler's court thing where all the good guys and the bad guys start beating the shit out of the New Age Outlaws and stuff like that. It's awesome.
I just can't imagine the lackey that the Monday afternoon is out there scouring a dumpster. You know what I mean? Go out there and clean that dumpster with this hose and this toothbrush, kid. We got to use.
Remember the match
this
WrestleMania? They had to hold the titles up because they used our own dumpster.
That's right.
Vince actually wanted to do a dry run with himself in the dumpster before the Raw even started.
That's right. Oh Lord. Number 41.
You know what this was like? This was like on that Nitro, where like halfway through Nitro, they did the thing where, you know, they take the baby faces and Mysterio went into the side of the trailer like a long dart, and like they had all the baby faces and heels like together while they're putting all these guys in ambulance and stuff like that. You remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Continue.
Shall I go with? Continue. 41. This I was reading this and I brought a smile to my face. Stone Cold Steve Austin and Booker T brawl in a grocery store on SmackDown December 13th of 2001, complete with Stone Cold Steve Austin dumping flour all over Booker and spraying him with mustard.
Yeah,
that was
an
awesome
you
brawl.
You approached like an owner of a supermarket with something like that.
I snorted. Yeah, this was hysterical. I loved every second of this.
Booker's just in there, and he's walking up and down the cereal aisle, and he just opened the box of the cereal and getting him a mouthful of Lucky Charms or something like that.
Oh,
it was
gosh.
Awesome. They paid a pretty penny for that because I think they had to pay for every single thing they did. They damaged in there, I'm pretty sure.
You remember all the coming out of like the dairy cooler with a big thing of milk, and he just takes a big swig of it and then hits Booker T in the head with it, and he says, "Jackass, price check on aisle 6 or something like that.
Oh gosh, I got to go back and watch this now. One of the most underrated shows.
Because it shows all these things.
Yeah, I know. I gotta put it in my queue tonight. Number 40 is another one of my favorite shows, Shotgun Saturday Night, Undertaker versus Triple H. Undertaker ended up tombstoning Triple H on an escalator. And his
wasn't that like
body.
A train station?
yeah, it was in
New York.
Yeah, in New York. It was tremendous. I loved Shotgun Saturday Night when it was on.
I was scared to take that bump on the escalator because I was scared my hair would get caught in one of those urban legends about your hair getting caught in the escalator.
Phenomenal.
I never got to see one of these Shotgun Saturday Night shows when they did them in the club.
I never got to see one of these.
I have a videotape, and I will send it to you, Couture.
A videotape? What's that?
Yeah. Oh, come on. I have videotapes. I have lots of them. I will send you that one. I recorded all the live ones.
He just admitted he still buys vinyl. Of course he has videotapes.
Whatever. Number 39, and this also brought a smile to my face, and it's kind of a funny reason why, but Tim White tries to commit suicide on various skits after his career is ended as a referee due to a shoulder injury.
This is so stupid, but it was funny as hell.
Uh-huh.
I remember people getting all offended, like, they're mucking suicide and stuff. Like, shit, like, most shows don't do that. Like, when they do comedy or something, they always mock suicide. Big deal.
Didn't he end up playing Josh Matthews?
I'm sorry?
I don't remember.
One of the very last suicide attempts, he ends up killing Josh Matthews by mistake.
I don't remember. I just remember in every skit you hear Josh Matthews say, "Mr. White, I don't think that's a very good idea. Please stop." All of a sudden, he was. I remember. You remember when they moved him to the website and they were doing them like weekly, like they had the Tim White suicide video of the day or something like that.
Yeah,
that was funny as hell. I'm sorry.
Oh jeez. Oh, goodness. Number 38. This was a pretty famous one. Vince McMahon hires Eric Bischoff and names him as general manager of Raw on June 15th of 2002. I thought my head was going to explode because it would not register this information.
All I remember is they were doing the Booker T promo backstage and can you dig it? And he looks over to the side and he's got this puzzled look on his face, and camera pans over and it's, holy shit, there's Eric Bischoff. And I was like, I just kind of sat there for a minute with my mouth wide open.
Exactly.
You know, the best part was like, tell me I did not see Eric Bischoff.
Yeah. And like, yeah, they come back to the ring and there's like a hush over the crowd.
That was actually the best part of it. And then I don't know. I mean, everyone's going to bitch about what happened, but I mean, you know, it was they did the wrong thing for business, but visually, I don't care what anyone says. That was actually awesome seeing them hug like that because you knew it was, like, insincere.
I don't know. I just always, the hug that cost them millions of dollars. It was like, really? Whatever. I don't know. I don't know about that. Whatever.
Number 37 has Cactus Jack versus Randy Orton in a hardcore match at Backlash, one of the first matches to put Randy Orton on the map.
Yeah, this match was awesome.
Definitely.
I think this is probably the last good match Cactus Jack had, or Mick Foley.
Yeah, it might be.
Well, he had the match with Flair last year. It was pretty damn good.
That match with Flair was pretty darn good, yeah, I was just going to say that.
Was this before or after the Edge one?
Oh, yeah, the Edge one, too. I forgot about that.
Yeah, the WrestleMania one with Edge was pretty darn good.
Yeah. Yeah, this one, remember, just Orton took the back bump into the... He was going for the RKO and then got shot off and took the back bump into the thumbtacks. I mean, that's kind of like just shock your whole body, you know, doing something like that.
I remember he actually had a
elbow and whatnot, and I was like, ugh, there's not a lot of meat there.
I also felt bad for the referee, because I'd be like looking for the clean spots on the mat when I got to do the count, so I don't slam my hand down into some thumbtacks.
I would be counting with my foot.
Yeah, I mean, Mick Foley, he's one of the ones that really got Randy Orton over in the beginning.
He was the main one that got him over. I mean, really.
Well, yeah, he got him over, and also just being in there with Hunter and Flair also helped him, you know, kind of get him over just by association. So.
Yeah, totally.
Number 36 is Batista more than it did Randy, but I hear what you're saying. Batista is the one that really benefited from hanging out with Triple H and Flair, because he totally became the star right after that.
Number 36 is just titled, very simply, Where to, Stephanie? Stephanie McMahon is abducted by the Ministry of Darkness on April 26th of 1999. She was held for ransom by The Undertaker, who demanded control of the company and was strung up to a cross. And while being wed to The Undertaker in a unholy union of darkness, I'm about to sneeze, it's not that I can't read, I'm about to sneeze. She was saved by Stone Cold Steve Austin just in the nick of time.
I remember this. This is a Vince Russo special right here, if I've ever seen one. But I liked it at the time, so I didn't mind it. It was goofy. It was kind of what they started to do. They started the Vince kind of like babyface turn, even though he was the one trying to have his daughter kidnapped because he was the higher power or something like that. I'm going to fake my daughter's, kidnapping or something.
The reason it worked back then, even though it was real goofy-ass Vince Russo shit, is just because you had awesome people doing it. You had Stone Cold and Vince and Stephanie and Undertaker. I mean, you know, they couldn't help but make it be good.
Yeah, and I mean, the idea was probably way shittier before it was edited, so.
Number 35, Mad Dog Vachon gets attacked by Diesel on April 28th of 1996 at the Good Friends and Better Enemies pay-per-view. Big Daddy Cool ripped off Vachon's leg and, as I remember, used it as a weapon. And at the end, you see him standing there, Big Daddy Cool, holding the fake leg over his head.
That was awesome. He pulled his leg off.
Yeah.
He didn't do that.
It was awesome because I didn't know he had a fake leg.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
It was like, holy shit. But
it was like the most
painful
thing somebody could do to you know, like a crippled person. You know? Like pulling Zach Gowen's leg off or something like that.
That was pretty tremendous too, actually.
I'd put this in probably top five matches Kevin Nash has ever had. This match was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to throw the one with Bret Hart in there as well.
Yeah.
Because that was awesome. Anyway, number 34, I barely remember this, but Rowdy Roddy Piper goes nuts and cuts the hair of a black midget at Tuesday Night Titans on March 7th, 1986. He did this because he hated Mr. T, and he hated Kid admitted to liking him.
Yeah, that was in the build-up for the boxing match at WrestleMania 2.
Right.
With Mr. T and Roddy Piper and... You know, the 80 kids happen to those the match in the ring, and they kidnap him and take him to the set of Piper's Pit. And they just, and I think they duct tape him to a chair, and they cut his hair like
that sounds
and
right.
And he's sitting there slapping the midget in the face, and the midget just saying, oh, somebody please help me, help me. And he's just crying, and yeah, this is the classic line of, he's talking about Mr. T, and he says, never would I cut my hair like an Indian or paint myself black.
Jeez. There was a lot of abuse to the little people in the 80s. I remember King Kong Bundy squishing Little Beaver. And
that was awesome. I would probably put that one in there over this one.
Absolutely.
I just remember you never really heard from the Haiti kid again. It was always Little Mr. T after that.
Right.
I don't think they were
Little Beaver,
people.
Little Beaver looked like he was freaking 60 years old in that match, too. That's what really was so fucked up about it.
Hey, you had Dwight Mitch and you had Bob Uecker on commentary. That was an awesome. That was 5 stars.
Didn't Little Beaver like die just like a couple years ago?
Maybe longer than that. I think he may have had diabetes or something. I don't know how I remember stuff like that, but.
Many died. Anyway.
I remember, yeah, and then the heel midges were so offended that they all turned on King Kong Bundy at the end.
That's right.
that's the stuff with King Kong Bundy. He goes from main event WrestleMania 2 to being in a match with Little Beaver at WrestleMania 3.
Right. phenomenal. Number 33, again, huge smile on my face right now. Vince McMahon is in the hospital on Monday Night Raw, October 5th, 1998. Mick Foley introduces Mr. Sacco, and Stone Cold beats the crap out of him with his own bedpan.
Just classic.
That is way too low
right there.
That is way too low. This was so freaking awesome because you had the whole skit with Foley and the clown and then Mr. Sacco. I mean, Jesus Christ,
yeah.
It got over a sock. One skit got over a sock.
It was like a version of Steve Austin's Austin 316 speech. You know, just like in one segment, you just got something over that people, you know, it just became like a phenomenon, like Mr. Sacco, which, I don't know, maybe I should be appalled that even got over, but it's funny as hell.
And then you had Stone Cold beating the shit out of Vince and Vince selling it like a fucking madman. I mean, Vince was awesome getting his ass kicked.
Oh, when you got here with the bedpan, that's when I died.
The part that killed me the most is Stone Cold is beating him up, and meanwhile the life support has gone flatlined. You just hear in the background as he's just destroying him with his bedpan.
I mean, you got Vince McMahon. He's like the leader. He's the leader of the wrestling world, and he's in there in his underwear and in a gown,
right.
And getting hit in the head with a bedpan and getting like a catheter stuck up his ass. That may have been the best Vince Austin thing they ever did. You know, like that kind of comedy stuff.
You know, it was comedy. It was comedy, but it was still serious because he was beating the shit out of him, and he looked like he was beating the shit out of him.
The sound the bedpan made when it bounced off his head was just classic. You know, like Bugs Bunny had ran into a giant bell. You know what I mean? Just amazing. Oh goodness! Number 32, Jeff Jarrett smashes Fabulous Moolah with a guitar on September 9th, 1999, episode of SmackDown, and then he put Mae Young in a figure four leg lock.
I believe this was the beginning of the beatings for Moolah and Mae Young. I think they were pretty much regulars after this.
Oh, poor Mae Young. She outlived Moolah. How did this happen?
She's a tough old bitch.
I'll say.
Have you ever seen that documentary, Craig? Have you ever seen the Living Dynamite documentary?
I have not. I think it's on Netflix right now. I'll check it out.
Yeah, check it out. It's actually badass.
Number 31, Ed cashes in his Money in the Bank briefcase on John Cena at New Year's Resolution pay-per-view on January 8th of 2006. Cena had just retained his title in an Elimination Chamber match. And the ultimate opportunist, Edge, won his first WWE championship.
Yeah, this was awesome.
That just started Edge when Edge was at his
pay-per-view. It had been such a shitty pay-per-view. And at that ending, I gave the pay-per-view thumbs up just for that ending with Edge winning. That was
right.
He took it to a whole other level on that run.
Then we
got
the live big celebration the next night.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Jump kill shot, that's all.
And let me see. Number 30. We're almost halfway through, fellas. Number 30, Kurt Angle sprays the Alliance, led by Stone Cold Steve Austin, with a milk truck hose on August 20th of 2001.
That's not even the best part. That's not even the best fucking part of that angle. The best part is when fucking the entire ECW and WCW crew is seeing the wind beneath my wings is so close to you.
They were actually
interrupted, Craig. He would have told you that.
Yes, I was just going to say they were actually singing. The Alliance was paying tribute to Austin by singing him The Wind Beneath Our Ring before Angle crashed the party with a milk truck. Tribute to Austin crashing Vince with a party beer truck. Crashing the party with a beer truck. This is edited wrong, I'm sorry. Yeah, tremendous. Stone Cold, of course, had done this before, and I'm sure that'll be on here later. Maybe it won't, but Angle was the All-American, so obviously milk is the best thing to use and spray the everybody with. Just tremendous.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I just remember they had everyone doing solos, like, just incredible. Yeah. Oh, man, I just, dude, they were so into it, dude. It was awesome, man. Tommy Dreamer, that was great.
But then when Canyon had the T-shirt that said Alliance MVP?
Not 100%, but that would make a lot of sense, actually.
No, I think they all had, like, the similar shirts on, except for Taz, because I remember Stone Cold told Taz some shit before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number 29, Vince McMahon creates the Kiss My Ass Club on November 19th of 2001. Vince literally pulled his pants down and made William Regal kiss the left cheek. And by the way, the star of this whole show was William Regal and his facials having to kiss the backside of the chairman of the board.
I couldn't hate that. William Regal was so awesome here. I loved every bit of this. This was awesome.
Yeah, it shouldn't have been entertaining, but it was. It was tremendous.
And Jerry Lawler saying, don't turn around too quick, Vince. You might poke him in the eye or something like that.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Everything they've ever had Regal do was awesome.
Number 28, and this might have been the start of his bad luck, Jeff Hardy gets caught in his own pyro during his entrance on January 16th, 2009 episode of SmackDown.
Yeah, that's when they were doing somebody's after Jeff Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it ended up being Matt, and Matt, like, I know what they said Matt burned his house down and killed his dog or something.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so they had him come out and then Matt had messed with his pyro, so it shot all up in his face and stuff like that. It looked like he was dancing amidst all these sparks and stuff like that. It was cool.
Mm-hmm. And the real story is that Matt Hardy was underneath the ring and he had a meth lab going up there, and that's actually what blew up. Anyway, number 27, Stone Cold Steve Austin returns to the WWE on April 27th, the 2000 episode of SmackDown, terrorizing Vince McMahon and family, including dropping a crane on top of the DX Express. I thought this was lame.
Yeah, the whole thing, he dropped
the payoff.
The thing closed up from the inside. It was stupid.
I don't know. Anytime something blows up, it's half bad. But it wasn't.
I liked it better
when
he chased Triple H into the car and they put the car on the big crane and then dumped the car over. That was awesome. And Triple H came back 2 weeks later. He's probably been, I don't know, in traction or in rehab or something. I don't know.
Oh, goodness. Number 26. Triple H crashes Stephanie McMahon's wedding to test on November 29th. This episode of Raw, it turned out the game had slipped Stephanie a Mickey and married her at a drive-through chapel while she was passed out. Cost $40. Triple H then made a joke about having sex with her that night. Ha ha ha.
That was so absurd, too, but you know it worked,
yeah.
So whatever.
The best part was when they're actually in the drive-thru of the chapel and Hunter's like, I do, and then do you, Stephanie? And he's like, I do. Just the side of his mouth.
I thought that was pretty good. I really like that. And I've actually, I know exactly where that
Mae Young getting drunk at like the bachelorette party, and she like fell on the cake because she got too drunk.
Oh gosh! Didn't she hire the fat stripper guy too? Wasn't he there?
I don't think he was. I don't think he was around back then.
Okay. Never mind.
Why do you even have him on your mind?
No kidding.
I'm gonna let that go. Okay, we are at the halfway mark, number 25, and I was actually at this show. Gene Snitsky punts a baby into the audience on Raw, November 8th, 2004. It wasn't his fault, though.
This was another stupid one. That whole, okay, yeah. So Lita's with Matt, and then Kane says she's going to beat up Matt, so Lita sleeps with Kane, so he won't beat up Matt, and then she impregnates Lita. Then Kane has a match with Gene Snitsky. It's like his debut, and something accidentally happens, and Lita gets hurt by Snitsky, and she loses the baby and miscarries. This whole thing was absurd.
You know, I actually, one of my buddies actually caught that doll.
Really?
He's got the doll to this day. He's not a good friend, but I know him, and he's got the stupid doll. Like,
that's Snitsky stuff to begin, the whole "it's not my fault" thing, and
That was pretty funny, but it was stupid. I thought it was pretty funny. I enjoyed it.
I need to take care of some business for just a minute, so I'm going to read number 24, and I'll be right back. It's family stuff, so I'll let you guys in on it in just a minute. Stone Cold Steve Austin pours cement into Vince McMahon's Corvette on the October 12th edition of Monday Night Raw of 1998.
Yeah, I remember this when Vince's filming. He's out there, he's honking his horn, but at the, you know, where they, in the parking garage, is like the garage door is closed, and he's honking his horn just like constantly, and he gets out of his car and says, "It's starting to rain, and this idiot won't open the door." I said, "Well, it's starting to rain, why didn't you put your top on your car back up?"
Yeah, it was pretty awesome, but I mean, It was like you know, he filled it up with cement, and I think like one of the windows broke, but it was kind of like, what's kind of like the big deal? It didn't really seem like that big of a deal to me, because it didn't even look like that nice of a vet.
Well, still, it's just destruction of a car, and I think they actually have like that on display somewhere, like at Titan Towers, that they sometimes take to like some of those fan access things and like have a display of the car with the cement in it.
Yeah, I've heard that. We actually got a caller on the line. You want to take him?
Sure. Go ahead.
All right. Caller from area code 519. Who's this?
Yellow.
Hello, caller. Well, it shows he's on the foot. Oh, he hung up. He chickened out, I guess. Oh, well.
What number was Craig on? Let me see. Okay, we're going up to number 23 now. I got the list in front of me, so I'll just continue with this. Right. Jake Roberts ties Macho Man up on the ropes and lets his cobra bite him on the November 23rd, 1991 edition of Superstars of Wrestling.
This is seriously too low. This is top fucking 10 or 5, actually. I mean... The snake went into business for himself and actually went and decided to make it a shoot and fucked Randy up.
And, I mean, this was like one of the more, aside from, you know, like some of the physical stuff that comes off as real. And I mean, the snake was biting his arm. What the fuck?
I know, it was like, for a minute, it's like, it's not real, and then you're like, no, wait, that looks pretty damn real. And then and he didn't want to let go.
I mean, if I was Macho Man, I would have been freaking out. You know, he sold it, so, you know, he's a true professional.
Right.
Number 22.
What did you think of the Macho Man getting bitten by the snake, Craig?
It was the most eerie thing I've ever seen in my life on wrestling, because that was a real cobra, and it really
bit Macho Man.
Yeah.
Enough said.
Number 22, Shane McMahon versus Steve Blackman in a hardcore match at SummerSlam on August 27th of 2000. Shane O'Mac takes a bump off the top of the entrance set, fell about 25 feet to a nice soft crash pad below, but you weren't supposed to think that.
Yeah, I mean, this was weird because it was like it was a little over a year after Owen Hart died, so I would thought that was kind of
tasteless. Yeah.
Yeah, get a big fall like that. You know,
it was pretty spectacular, but I don't know.
I would not be sending my reference going high for anything, you know, like for maybe a few years. But that's just me. Not doing anything too out there. You know, stunt.
It was Shane. He had to do something big, you know, to make it look serious.
Well, that was like the second year in a row he had like the best out of on the SummerSlam match. You know,
it was like his gimmick. That's why he did it. It was kind of like his gimmick to get over, you know, because he really tended to too much.
Yeah, well, it takes no talent to, you know, do that stuff.
Yeah, no, well, that's why he did
it. Number 21, Shawn Michaels breaks up the Rockers by throwing Marty Jannetty through a glass window at a episode of The Barbershop on January 11th of 1992, Wrestling Challenge.
This was
You know, it actually happened. It actually happened on the Tuesday night in Texas.
Yeah, because they had taped a bunch of stuff. They used to tape like a month or two in advance at that point.
Yeah, I went to that show. They taped a lot. They had not only did they tape a lot of stuff. They had dark matches. They had Tatanka in the dark match. They had like Chris Adams in a dark match, and they had that one guy, J.W. Strong.
Tag team with Beetlejuice or something.
Yeah, when he was important, it was with Beetlejuice. Yeah, and they filmed a lot of shit, but that was actually pretty awesome, and it was an awesome enough to where you got the hometown crowd to boo the shit out of Shawn Michaels after he did it.
And that was seriously one of the best turns ever. I mean, especially when I was kind of shocked when he went through the window and, you know, he bladed. Because they weren't really doing, well, they had, this was right around the time with the snake biting the arm, so they were going a little bit further at that point. But, yeah, when he went through the window, holy shit.
Yep. Yeah, it was a pretty awesome angle, you know, that was the beginning of my love for the heels at the time, because Shawn Michaels was so spectacular.
Yeah.
Number 20 is WrestleMania 17, the first tables, ladders, and chairs match on April 1st, 2001. Hardy Boys versus the Dudley Boys versus Edge and Christian. Just a huge spot fest. Ended with Jeff Hardy hanging from the title and Edge giving a spear off the ladder set up in the corner. Just a tremendous, tremendous spot. Still, you know, plays on WWE TV. You can see this, just an awesome, awesome match.
Yeah, that's one of those spots you're never going to forget.
Oh, yeah. Just phenomenal.
They had so many awesome matches.
You were there live, right?
The what?
You were there live.
The one in Houston, yeah. Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, and that was also cool because that's when they had, like, Alita got involved and Rhino got involved and, I guess, but Spike down involved. Yeah, and it was awesome. But I mean, and it wasn't just that one match. I mean, that was a nice couple year era where you just had some awesome tag team matches because you could either have all three or two against, one against the other, and it's a far cry from the tag team scene that they have today.
Yeah, that was really one of the last. Aside from this, and maybe. I don't know, that time on SmackDown when they had, like, Los Guerreros and Benoit and Angle and Ray and Edge all going for the tag team titles. It's like one of those last big tag team programs.
And then what's the greatest tag team? Yeah.
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 Number 19, July 14th, 2003. This was on Raw. Kane does an interview with Jim Ross that culminates in good old JR getting doused with gasoline and lit on fire. The best part of the segment is on the DVD, Santino Marella is doing commentary, and he said, "Who wants to light JR on fire? I know he's into barbecue, but he doesn't want to be the meat."
He was awesome on this DVD. Santino was. He's just funny as hell. But yeah, set Jim Ross on fire. That was
amazing.
Oh man, that was poor JR. All the poor shit they've done to that man.
And he still comes back. He's... Think about that. Oh goodness. September 22nd, 1997. On Raw, Stone Cold Steve Austin comes back from breaking his neck too early to stun Vince McMahon, who was trying to tell him he wasn't ready to compete.
Yeah, this was the first stunner on Vince at Madison Square Garden. This is awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
Okay. Not too much said about that. 17. Kurt Angle sends Shane McMahon through the glass at the entrance ramp on his head on June 24th, 2001, King of the Ring. Angle tried multiple times to send McMahon through the glass and failed multiple times. Shane O'Mac dropped on his head at least a half dozen times. The glass was not giving, and so they tried throwing him harder and harder and harder, and finally got it to break. But
that
was ugly.
So... That was so awesome. He fucking nearly killed Shane. I mean, oh, my God. He's just... I never felt so bad for somebody in a wrestling match in my life after that match.
And, you know, Shane McMahon is... Well, he's not a good worker. And myself and Brian and Vince were watching this. And we always... remembered back to the time where Kane and McMahon were having a match and there was a big crash pad and Shane dropped an elbow on him and Kane kind of no-selled it and he clobbered McMahon in the back with his forearm and it sounded like a chop, but it was like more hollow sounding. It was like, wham! And it was like, ooh, he just got a receipt. And so we would always, you know, hey, you remember that one time when Kane hit Shane O'Mac really hard on the back with a forearm. We go, yeah, that was cool. And then I remember watching this match and, you know, watching Shane land on his head multiple times, and I'm pretty sure he was busted open too.
Yeah.
I felt sorry for him, you know, and I felt sorry for the fact that, you know, we had made such fun of him and the fact that he was just being brutalized and all the brutalization he had done to people, you know, because he's a bad worker, and then to see him land on his head repeatedly in one match, you just had to feel sorry for the dude.
Yeah, I remember he finally got like one of the suplexes. He got him through one of the pieces of glass, and then when he went back to another piece, he did it twice, and then he finally got so frustrated he just flung him through head first
right
the glass.
Yeah. Kurt Angle gotta have the biggest balls in the world to do that to the boss's son, for him to not give up on that spot and make sure he got his ass through the glass. I mean, most guys would have gave up, you know, but not Kurt Angle.
Isn't it the match where Kurt also literally broke his ass?
He broke his tailbone, yeah, or something.
Yeah, that on suplex.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, that was a brutal match, but awesome. Jeff Hardy, this is number 16, by the way, Jeff Hardy backdrops Randy Orton off the stage on Raw, January 14th, 2008, before climbing to the top of the entrance set and doing a swanton bomb.
Yeah, I remember that. That was like right before the Royal Rumble where he was going to challenge Randy for the title. He was getting really hot back then, so.
Yeah, just an awesome spot. Even more spectacular than this one was actually the one he did in TNA where he put Abyss through the table, you know, doing the same gimmick off the top of their set. Yeah, he's he takes pain pills. Anyway, number 15, WrestleMania 22. We mentioned this earlier, April 2nd, 2006. Edge spears Mick Foley off the ring in through a burning table.
Yeah, that was an awesome match.
Tremendous match. Probably the one of the best matches of that year, easily.
Yeah. May have been the best match on that show.
I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah, it was pretty great. I mean, and then just seeing Foley go through the fire in the table, that was awesome.
And probably the first time ever using a fire gimmick in WWE besides the Inferno match. So.
Oh, well, didn't they do it in one of those, maybe the first ECW show?
This was 2008. Yeah, Balls Mahoney.
Maybe like
did
his
it.
First one night stand or something like that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, good stuff. Number 14, Stone Cold Steve Austin drives into the arena on a Zamboni on September 28th, 1998, knocking down power, lights, and a sound system. Hit them on the way out. He actually made the Titantron sway and the ring move before he jumped over the rope and attacked Vince McMahon.
This was
awesome. I just remember he ran over something and the thing got stuck on the bottom. He just dragged it with him all over the ring.
I remember that when he was going over, like, he was catching all this equipment, and all of a sudden you could see people talking, but the whole thing was out of sync. So you'd
right.
see their lips moving, but you wouldn't hear them talking. But like a minute later, you would hear them talking. It was strange.
Yeah. And, well, I don't think the Zamboni has, you know, much of... I'm sure you could oversteer it very easily because, you know, you drive it on ice and such. So... he was having a little bit of a hard time driving that, and
I remember the crowd reaction for that when he stood up on the Zamboni and then jumped over all the cops and gave him a clothesline.
Yeah.
That was awesome stuff.
Yeah, that's good. That was the best fucking run in the history of pro wrestling.
That was also the same night that I don't know. He was then after Stone Cold got arrested, as he usually did after all these things. McMahon was in the ring with Taker and Kane and. And then Taker said, "If you ever pop off to me or him again, we're gonna hurt you bad." And so they turn their backs, and Vince just gives them two middle fingers, and then but they turn around real quick, and he gets caught.
Yeah.
And so they take him outside and like slam the steps on his ankle or something like that. I think that's where he wound up in the hospital from when Stone Cold and then Mick Foley showed up in the hospital the next week. So.
I just remember when they were trying, like, Vince is there screaming in pain, and everyone's like, all the ass-kisses are trying to help him, and Mick Foley or Mankind is there with, like, a big gulp trying to give him some soda. was, like, the start. That was kind of, like, the start of, like, the whole Vince-Mankind thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was tremendous.
Oh, goodness. Number 13, July 17th, 1984, Tuesday Night Titans. Roddy Piper hosting a episode of Piper's Pit featuring Jimmy Superfly Snuka. well, Piper, this was the infamous coconut spot. Piper attacked Snuka, hit him with a coconut, sending him crashing through the set. Just awesome. If you haven't seen this and you're too young to remember it, go find it. Right now. Turn the show off.
This is one of the greatest things of all time. I mean, because he fucking jacked him with that coconut. I mean, it wasn't a gimmick coconut. He broke that damn thing over his face and head and then whipped him and threw him through the set. And then it could just go insane when it's over. I mean, that one skit made Roddy Piper the biggest heel in the business for years and years after.
Yeah. I mean, I just love at the end when you know, Piper's walking away and Snuka slowly is starting to get up. He finally makes it to his feet, and he sees Piper, and he runs for him, and then Piper just slams his door in his face, and he's just, you know, sitting there pounding on his door that Piper just locked on him. And It's still the racist stuff. He's sitting there. He's calling him a monkey, and he likes to swing some of the trees and stuff like that.
He's rubbing a banana in his face and stuff.
Yeah, that was funny as hell.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Number 12. Vince McMahon purchases a WCW on March 26, 2001. USA runs a simulcast with WWE and WCW in which Shane McMahon announces he bought WCW out from underneath his father.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I don't know what was the best part, him like firing Jared and Luger basically live on TV or Ric Flair's promo, because Ric Flair cut one hell of a fucking promo that night.
Yeah, I was just the most surreal thing to me was like, because I'm watching, because Nitro's starting,
yeah.
And so I turned that on, and you know they have like the WCW signature at the beginning, and then they're standing, Vince McMahon standing right there, like simulcast from the Monday Night Raw set, and said, holy shit, this is something.
Now, see, I had cable at this time, so I actually was able to watch Nitro before Raw came on, so Raw would start at 11 over here, but because of the cable situation, TBS actually started on like at 5 over here, so I would actually watch all of Nitro and then get to watch WWE or WWF at the time right after that. So I'd actually seen this before, you know, I had seen the Raw feed. So it was pretty weird to see that, you know, never in a million years did I think that would happen. And there's Shane O'Mac.
For you guys, because that was awesome, because I had two TVs going with two VCRs going, and I was running back and forth between each one of them. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. That was unreal. What is also unreal, and the whole situation was unreal, including the breasts, Mae Young showed hers at the Royal Rumble pay-per-view on January 23rd, 2000. They added in her infamous moment with the Dudley Boys, in which Bubba Ray powerbombed her off the entrance ramp through the table on Raw on March 6th. To top it all off, they added her giving birth to a hand on Raw with the now world champion Mark Henry, smoking a cigar as Jerry Briscoe was in the corner puking his guts out.
That was so stupid.
This was
a couple of weeks ago when they were talking about, you know, Mark Henry was there for so long, and they did so much to try to make him quit, and I guarantee you this is one of them.
Oh, yeah.
The affair with Mae Young.
Oh, yeah. They've done so much to that poor man. I was actually in the hospital all doped up on morphine. I had just had my fall, and I was so disgusted with WWE because he admitted he slept with his sister. I turned off WWE, and I didn't turn it on again for weeks. I was like, are you serious? And I turned it on, and I didn't turn it back on until my buddy brought over the Hardy Boys and Edge ladder match from that pay-per-view. It was right after that. Shoot.
What happened when he gets a blowjob from the transvestite?
That was the one. Yeah. Anyway. Good God, that was some horrible TV. And why Mark Henry's still in that company, I have no idea. But his patience has paid off. But anyway, we're talking about Mae Young. This was actually, she did strip down, and there was there was prosthesis in place, and those were not her breasts. But just the image is burned into my head for the rest of time. Thank you, Vince McMahon.
It was there this right after, you know, There's Something About Mary came out, and they had the intimate
right.
scene with the
yeah.
woman's breath thing.
You know, the weird part is I bet the real ones aren't much different from the fake ones.
You know what? I was looking at, like, the stuff with the Dudley, and this company's so lucky that they have not killed this woman.
Yeah.
You know, and the funny part is, because they did it twice, and if you remember, first time they protected her a lot more than the second time. That's because after the first one, she went up to Bubba and gave him a big-ass forearm and told him not to ever take it that easy on her again.
And didn't 3-minute warning almost kill her?
They had
numerous.
Yep.
Numerous
times. They almost killed numerous people. I remember they beat up the two lesbians and like almost killed one of them.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But they're so lucky that they didn't kill like Mueller or Mae Young any of those times.
Gosh. Yeah.
And it looked like they were trying to kill her many times. I don't know, maybe. I don't know.
That's number, all
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't remember this angle. Number 10 is the Big Boss Man drives off with Big Show's casket on November 11th, 1999.
This is when his dad had cancer and died. You know, we went to the funeral.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, the Boss Man had found out that it wasn't really his daddy, that he was a bastard child or something
right.
like that. His mother was a whore. And so he pulled up in like the Blues Brothers, like police car or something. And
okay.
And he changed Big Show's casket.
That's right.
The funeral
and Big Show
the car.
And Big Show was riding on top of the casket.
Daddy, and he was surfing like his dad's casket going into a graveyard. It was hilarious. He was terrible.
You know, it was funny. As funny as that was, someone made it even better. There was this little 5-minute movie thing that somebody had made years and years and years ago that was a spoof on Pulp Fiction and WWE wrestling. And you know, in Pulp Fiction, they have the part where the little kid is given his dad's gold watch. Well, they show like that those scenes, and then they mix it in with the Big Boss Man smashing the Big Show's dad's watch. And then they show the funeral scene, and they show where Big Show jumps on the casket, and then they start to play the Dukes of Hazzard music. So while he's surfing the casket, they're playing, you know, the good old boy song. And it was so funny the way it originally aired, but when you add it to this little movie that this person made, it was the fucking greatest thing ever.
I mean, you couldn't get any better than payoff for him on his dad's casket being pulled through the funeral, through the graveyard by the Big Boss Man.
Yeah.
That's just still over the top. I can't hate something like that.
Was this a Vince Russo special? This is 99.
Yeah. I think this was, let me see. This was in 99, and may have been around the time that he left, or maybe have been done a little after. Maybe this is some stuff he wrote and then he left, and somebody found
right.
Maybe somebody picked it up out of the garbage after Vince McMahon looked at it and edited it, so it wouldn't be too shitty.
Was this before or after Al Snow ate his own dog with the Big Boss Man?
This was after Al Snow ate his own dog.
Okay.
He kept steak.
Oh, Boss Man, God rest your soul. Number 9, the Montreal Screwjob took place on November 9th, 1997 at the Survivor Series. Oh, my gosh. Brian knew something was up the minute this happened, and I was looking at him. He was looking at me. I'm like, what just happened? And he goes, I think they screwed Bret Hart out of the title. I'm like, nah.
This is in the top 10, but this is kind of too low in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree, especially when you're
number
eight.
This would either be number 1 or number 2. You know,
it has to be number 1. It has to be number 1 because it's changed the whole business.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we're going to read some just in a few minutes here that you're like, oh, wait, that's number 9. Should this, ah. Yeah, the Montreal Screwjob should have been, 2 or 3. At the,
that was like one of the most realest thing that ever been, you know.
Well, that's because it was real.
Yeah. But I mean, you're seeing it on like a pay per view installation. It's just so strange, you know, that you saw this.
Yeah, it was tremendous. I mean, the match was going great, and you know, Shawn Michaels locks on the sharpshooter, and Earl Hebner's like, ring the bell, and wow, it's over. That's weird, and Sean's looking dismayed, and what the heck happened, and, you know, Earl's telling him, celebrate, turn your hands up, you know. And
he goes out the back door. His brother's got the car warmed up and the engine going, and they hit out of town.
Crazy stuff.
I mean, wrestling with Shadows did the best job of, you know, presenting this.
Absolutely.
You don't even need to see the actual match. You just need to see the Wrestling with Shadows documentary.
Yeah. Yeah, them, I mean, him and
Triple H in the back. saying, you
right.
guys, don't give me that shit, Hunter. You guys are going to go laugh about this and have a beer.
And Sean's in the same dressing room with Brett. Brett looks at him as they're unlacing their boots. Sean, do you have anything to do with that?
No, I swear to God.
Brian, my witness, my hands are clean this one.
You could hear he was crying like a little bitch when he was denying it. I wish they would have got the camera on him.
And then Vince limps out of the dressing room. And he looks so embarrassed. You just see
him pulling
his head and
he's
limping and, you know, Shane's right behind him. And
mm-hmm.
It's the fact that they got all this on film. You know, it's just so strange.
Mm-hmm.
I remember people were complaining about it. Oh, this has to be a work because Brett's wife called Hunter by his gimmick name, Hunter. It's like, whatever, we do that all the time. Lance was just talking about it yesterday on Brian's show.
Some people still call Sandman Hack.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
I haven't wrestled for over 10 years, and if I go to an indie show, there'd be some, you know, guy from the, hey, Corrosion, what's up? Craig, how you doing? Anyway, number 8 is Brock Lesnar suplexes Big Show and the ring collapses underneath them on the June 12th, 2003 edition of SmackDown. This was a spectacle.
That was awesome.
I just remember Taz just goes, and they bleeped it, but Taz goes, holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were good at this stuff, you know. It's just strange that they could have those two big guys having a match in the ring and then just do this and have the ring set up so this one spot takes out the entire ring. That's awesome.
They had those bulls in there taking bumps and doing all this stuff, and how they pulled it off, I never will be able to understand, but more power to
those
them.
Two guys
it looked amazing.
This was okay. Those two guys had good chemistry together. You don't see too many people like that with the Big Show.
Well, you couldn't get anybody else to throw Show around.
Yeah.
You know, that probably took years off Show's wrestling career. You know, that's the first time he's had to bump. Goodness. Just amazing. Number 7 is Vince McMahon brings Mike Tyson to Raw. Stone Cold Steve Austin comes out and picks a fight with him. This happened on January 19th. 1998, and this, in my personal opinion, should have been number 1 because this
it
changed.
It really started to turn around.
Yeah, it changed WWE forever after this happened.
Yeah, this was the best celebrity involvement they ever had, I think.
Oh yeah, easily.
Not so much him being at WrestleMania, but just this angle right here to start that off.
Yeah,
just awesome. I mean, the heat in the arena, and Vince is like flipping out saying, you ruined it, damn it, you ruined it. And just giving him the finger as they're dragging him out of the ring. It was so awesome. And then they go backstage, like they go to a break and come back, and then they get this thing, they're trying to calm Tyson down, and then Tyson just screams out, come, I'll whip your ass, you faggot, just right there on TV.
Yeah, that was awesome. That's one of the greatest moments in the history of Raw.
Yeah, and that's money well spent too. Vince bringing it.
Oh, absolutely. The payoff, you know, there at the end where Tyson, you know, is on Stone Cold's side. You know, the WrestleMania match, it was fine, but this was money going into the show for sure.
I like when he did the turn like he was in DX, and he ripped the shirt off and he had the DX shirt on. I thought that was pretty cool.
Right, and he was running around doing the crotch chop, and and it was like a kid with a brand new toy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was so happy to do it. Hey, look what I got, guys! Crotch chop.
He was a fan growing up in New York because they would have some things in the back room the first night he was there, and he's talking about. Now, yeah, Bob Backlund, that used to be my boy back in the day, you know, Bruno or somebody like that.
Yeah, he did say Bruno because I remember Vince was, like, really uncomfortable when he mentioned Bruno's name. I remember that. Oh, goodness. Number 6,
June 11th of 2007, this episode of Raw featured Vince McMahon's limo getting blown up directly after he climbs inside it. His quote-unquote death was reported as legitimate by several reputable media outlets. It was, of course, an angle. It was, of course, an angle. Because of Chris Benoit's death a month later, WWE was forced to reveal it. It was just a storyline.
Yeah, that damn Benoit was hooked up.
The thing I remember about that whole damn thing is fucking Paul London.
Oh, yeah, this is when he got heat. Vince is going to the limo, and he's, uh-huh. Actually, whoever, a couple of people that were doing, like, little comments on the DVD were talking about, yep, this is the Paul London thing. Paul London back there, and he just has the goofiest look on his face.
Like
as
he can't believe what he just saw.
Everybody... Do what?
Like somebody had just seen what he doesn't believe.
Yeah, and everybody else is just like, they're pretty serious, you know, like selling it as, you know, this is the boss here. And
mm-hmm.
I can see why London got heat for that, because he just looked like a goofball.
Well, he was probably stoned. Just saying. Number five, and another thing that has been burned into my memory. Sable shows her breasts with hands printed on them on the July 26th episode of Fully Loaded Pay-Per-View in a bikini contest. Yeah.
It's a little high for me, but whatever.
Yeah. You know,
anyone higher than this.
It's high because you've seen more in, like, other bikini contests where you've actually seen more breasts than what she was actually showing.
Well, what's funny is I saw way more Jacqueline than I wanted to see in the bikini contest. She is dancing there with that red bikini on, and I'll just say, you know, I saw she looked like a chocolate chip.
Right. Two of them, as I remember.
I mean, it flopped right out right there. I mean, it was pretty damn funny. But I
now,
was Kitty higher than that because I actually saw her breasts.
Was this before or after the incident with a cat in the mud?
Oh, this was way before that. This was like a year or so, year and a half before.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I know. Okay. Yeah. That incident. Well, I would have much rather seen Fable, but I'll just leave it at that. She was a beautiful, beautiful girl, and probably still is. So, Mark Merrill, you're a happy, happy, happy man. And now, Brock Lesnar, you're a happy, happy man. Anyway, boobs are.
That's his wife. I heard him talk one time about he gets on top of her.
That's true. Number four, one of my all-time memories. Watching wrestling as a kid. 1983, October 17th, Madison Square Garden. Jimmy Superfly Snuka flies off the top of the cage onto Don Morocco.
Yeah, that was... I think I saw this maybe like on one of the best of the WWF videotapes. It was like one of the few wrestling videotapes I could find at the time, like in around 85 when I first started watching it. Yeah, this was awesome. This was the one where Mick Foley was in the audience.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say Edge, but I wasn't 100% sure. Yeah, it was Mick Foley.
No, that
was
Warrior and Hogan.
That's right.
That Edge was in that. What's funny is, like, I think maybe it was the year before that he actually tried this in a match with Bob Backlund in a cage. And he
I was about to bring that up because I saw that one, too, and that was just as awesome. The only difference was that Backlund got out of the way. I can't remember, but it was pretty awesome. You know, but for some reason, the Morocco was the one that gets all the airplay.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think Superfly actually overshot Backlund and ended up landing on his knees over him. He landed, like, his knees landed on Backlund's chest.
I don't know.
I remember. I'm not 100%, but
it's been a while.
I remember the Morocco match had one of the goofiest finishes. So the Intercontinental title, they've been heading this heated feud, and you know, you got to escape the cage, and so Snuka gives him like this big headbutt and it shoots Morocco right out the door.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
That's why he was so furious
right.
and brought him back in.
Brought him back in. Yeah, it wasn't actually the finish of the match. It was the after match. But by the way, Don Morocco was a roided up freak and was a horrible wrestler. I'll just say it now.
What? No. You okay? That's the story.
Maybe later on.
Was a horrible wrestler. The fat Don Morocco was awesome.
All right, fine. But
he had awesome
matches
with Jimmy Snuka. He had awesome matches with Rocky Johnson. He had some good matches in Georgia. He was awesome when he was fat.
All right, I'll give you that.
Steamboat. They had a good few.
Well, who was on the other side of that? Come on. Number three. This is one of my favorite memories, and it shouldn't be, but it was awesome. Brian Pillman pulls a gun on Stone Cold Steve Austin when Stone Cold broke into Pillman's home. He was recovering. This being Pillman, Pillman was recovering from a leg injury, and this was on the November 4th, 1996 edition of Monday Night Raw. This was tremendous because Pillman was down, like, in his basement or whatever, and Pillman's old Bengals jersey was hanging on the wall, and him and his wife were watching TV or whatever, and then this crazed man comes into the house, and Pillman pulls a gun on him, and the screen went blank.
Yeah.
And we heard gunshots on wrestling. Unbelievable.
I remember there were reports that Steve Austin was circling the neighborhood trying to get his Brian Pillman or something like that. And he beat the shit out of his friends, like out in the front yard. That was
they tried to make it sound like those guys were like Cincinnati Bengals or like Cincinnati Bengals. And then I kind of just wish that someone would have had an extra camera just on Les Thatcher's face the whole time he was filming all this.
And when he was beating the shit out of those guys outside, he picked up like one of those toy wagons, and he just smashed his country
right
in his head.
I forgot about that.
And he's coming in, he's breaking into the house, and Phil's got the gun on him, and Austin's just saying, shoot me, shoot me. That was awesome. I think they almost got thrown off the air for this.
Yes, they almost did.
You can't have a gun on a wrestling show. Come on.
Only to be outdone just months later when Austin pulled a gun on Vince McMahon, but it was a little toy gun with a flag, and it said bang, and Vince McMahon wet his pants.
Oh, and then when they shot the Big Show with the what is it,
elephant
like
gun?
That they use on animals, a dart gun?
Yeah, an elephant
with
gun.
With a tranquilizer in it. That was awesome. He really stuck it in his ass or something like that. It's tremendous.
Oh, gosh. Number two, Stone Cold Steve Austin shows up on Raw March 22nd, 1999 with a beer truck, sprays Vince McMahon, Shane McMahon, and The Rock with a hose full of beer. This was awesome.
The best part was he almost killed himself trying to take a drink out of the hose. When
Yeah. Gave himself third-degree burns.
Almost ruined that surgically repaired neck.
Oh, shit. Like the first eight rows of fans were completely soaked. The ring was soaked. Steve was like doing the backstroke in the ring at the end of the thing. Just tremendous. My friend, he's been on the show, Matt Farmer's got, I won't say what exactly happened, but he was backstage at a Raw in Portland. And this was years ago, but he grabbed the videotape out of one of the TVs backstage at the show. And it's got, like, everything from the very beginning of Superstars, all the Raw tapings, and then it's got the aftermath of Stone Cold having a beer bash after Raw went off the air. Steve Austin is hammered trying to make his way back to the ring. He's drinking beers. At one point, he signed a beer can and gave it to a kid that couldn't have been more than 10, and it was half full, and he's stumbling around, and he's drinking, and hey, everybody, and he falls down up the ramp at one point. This is good stuff. This will never see the light of day, but it was.
Was that just like raw satellite feed stuff or something like that?
It was on a TV backstage. They had a VCR hooked up to it, taping the show. Apparently, there was a ton of them around the backstage area, and my good friend and felon Matt Farmer decided, you know, that tape would look good in my bag, so that's where he put it, and he took it home with him. And has since worked for the company, so I must not have got caught.
But yeah, I thought it was like, still, you know, like the raw feed stuff sometimes when you see one of those things on YouTube and it's got like the raw satellite feed and the announcers are just like talking amongst themselves or something like that, preparing for the show or something like that. Or it was raw satellite feed to the Pillman gun angle when they were running through, like rehearsing the whole thing, and they're saying they're Kevin Kelly's going over, you know, won't you act like this, and this is what you need to say, and stuff like that. It was pretty interesting.
Huh. Interesting. And with 5 minutes left in our show, we finally get to number one. Oh, goodness. Undertaker throws Mankind off the top of the Hell in a Cell cage at the King of the Ring, June 28th, 1989. It was a planned fall with Mick Foley guiding himself down using the cage to turn his back to the announce table. It didn't help much as he sustained all sorts of injuries. They tried to take him out, but he went back into the cage again. After that, the battle with Taker went up top of the cage, and the dead man choke slammed him through the top of the cage onto the ring with a chair landing on him as he fell, which was actually more of a brutal spot than the first one. But Mick Foley put his name on the map with this spectacular performance.
I've never had a match make me speechless as much as this match did. I mean, when he grabbed and threw him over the cage, I just remember, like, just in my head, I was thinking, "Oh my God!" and just being in shock. And then my friend's like, "Was that supposed to happen?" And I had no answer for him. You know, and then I just pretty much watched the rest of that match just in dead silence, just like, just taking it in, because, I mean, that was insane. Whoever would have thought they were going to throw him off the top of the cage, but they fucking did.
It came off to me like when it happened that, you know, they wanted to do this, but they didn't realize he'd get hurt so bad, and I thought that the match was probably over right after that first fall. I thought it was just,
I thought it was done.
Knocked himself out, and this is going to be like a very short match. But no, it kept going.
First spot of the match. I guess if he really did get hurt, that would have been the best way to end it. You know, but you know, hey, we just saw somebody die, and
like
you know,
bring the thumbtacks out, like it was really needed. Not that I complain, but still,
no doubt.
At that point, it's just like sadomasochism, you know.
Man, what a...
Like Jim Ross, like, he won't stop smiling.
Then then after that fall in the ring, and he's got the tooth in his nose.
Yeah.
The chair follows him down from that second bump and just smashes into his face.
One of my favorite parts of his book is when he talks about how he wakes up and all of a sudden he's like, why are Terry Funk's shoes in the ring?
That's right.
That's another thing that made it seem more real, too, was when Terry Funk came out there. And, you know, Vince is out there, everybody's out there. And Jim Ross keeps saying, somebody stop the damn match. It's just like, he's like appalled it's just still going on.
I know, that was crazy. That was one of Jim Ross's greatest performances. But real quick, everyone check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download the Stream Marks show at AngryMarks.com, along with a lot of other shows. So everyone check out AngryMarks.com.
It was, I would put Montreal number one. This would be number two. Hell in the Cell.
I'll go with that. Yeah, I hear you.
Did you know there's no Katie Dick on this list?
Well, thank God.
I would really be embarrassed of that one.
Yeah, there's some stuff that, you know, you can
there's
argue
no
with this.
Happy at PP.
That was awesome now. Copy the PP. That was tremendous.
Oh, fuck, dude.
Then he came out the next week with John Bobbitt, and he was in a wheelchair with John Bobbitt.
Oh, that's right.
That was awesome.
Oh, man. That's crazy.
He breaks up with Yamaguchi's son's wife and then gives her some batteries. Said, you'll need these, lady.
Oh, man. Oh, goodness.
I miss Kai and Tai.
Cool. Well, we actually managed to run down all 50, so before we go, you got any last things you want to talk about, Craig?
No, I'm all talked out. If you listen to this, if you're a praying man, send up a couple for my wife. She's actually got diagnosed with diaper reticulitis, the same thing that Brock Lesnar had.
Ooh.
And she's got an infection in her intestines, and actually just came back from the doctor as I was. I had to take a little break here in the show. Seems that, you know, they got her on all kinds of medication, but she's been eating, she's been eating chicken broth and water for the last 2 days.
Mm.
So when you send up a prayer for her, maybe send one up for me, too, because she's kind of getting crabby, and I understand why. So the propers are going to have to change some things in their eating habits, and that'll be good for me and her, so...
Will she be more or less crabby than you would think Brock Lesnar would be when he was recovering?
I'm going to say less. If Brock Lesnar is my measuring stick, she's going to become one heck of an ultimate fighter after she gets over this thing. Anyway.
Also, everybody send out a good thought for Doc Young from Wrestling Weekly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's... This one's more close to my heart, but yeah, a lot of people down and out. It's kind of weird right now. So, well, thanks, guys. I got to get to bed because I have to go to work in the morning. It's going
all right.
48 hours. So anyway, I will talk to you all again later.
All right.
I'll talk to you later, Craig. Contreras, are you still there?
Yeah.
You notice he cut and run before I got a chance to talk about my last few things. How rude of him.
What were you going to talk about?
Nothing really. just in case there's someone who doesn't know, after 18 years, the mullet is no more. The mullet is gone. And I still don't know how I feel about this. But
is it something Barb made you do?
It's not something she made me do. It's just something she's been bugging me about for the longest time. And So
no more.
I ended up doing
it. Our business in the front. There's no more party in the back.
Yeah, but it's not just her. I mean, every girl I know has been giving me shit about this for the longest time. So I think they all got together and decided to plot against me on Facebook. So it's just been driving me crazy, so that's basically why I did. So.
Was it sad? What did you do with it? Did you bury it, or you just toss it in the garbage?
I still got it. I got it in the drawer right now. I'll probably take it to one of those charity
places. Cancer places where they recycle the hair.
Yeah, because there's fucking enough of it. The damn thing's pretty goddamn long. Or I was kind of thinking. Maybe, like, in Vegas, auctioning it off and, you know, whatever. I'm sure it won't go for too much, but auction it off with the proceeds going to maybe Doc or something, you know.
Take a picture of it and make it your new Facebook profile photo. Just the mullet.
Just the ponytail?
Yeah, just the ponytail.
Yeah. I might do that. But, yeah, so it's gone. So, anyway, so I guess we'll go ahead and end the show. And so everybody come back next week. I'm sure we'll have plenty of things to talk about next week. So,
yeah.
Talk to everybody then.
Be the man! You gotta beat the man! You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick! Let's go hook him up! Oh.
dog you until I wear your Texas ass out today.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.